So we...Acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spotless, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a...
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 25, Can't Get Enough of Downton Abbey. 3rd February 2014. I'm your host, Sarah, podcasting from Silver Lake Tea House. This episode features the following segments: A Little Bit of Learning, The Back Porch, and Double Happiness. Welcome to the show. This week, I heard from listeners Knitting Lady 54, Gwen from Arkansas, Bobby, who is Robin from Colorado, Lindsay Adelaide OZ, Lindsay from South Australia, Hilltop Fiber, who is Elizabeth from Ontario, Canada, and Volley 04 left an iTunes review. Thanks so much to everyone who has been in contact with me this week. Show notes for this episode are located on my website, yarns@yinhu.com. There is a blog post for each episode with photographs and links to the things I talk about. You can also find me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter as Sarah Pomegranate. Happy Monday, everyone. Typically, I would be very hard at work at school this hour, but we have our fourth snow day of the year, and this time it is really snowing. It's just after noon, and the snow has been coming down since before daylight. I stepped out on my back porch at about 7 a.m. and took a photograph that I will post on the show notes. There wasn't much light, but this is the kind of snow that sticks to everything. I'm just thinking about how heavy it will be when I have to go outside and shovel, but it's so beautiful right now because the air is very still and the snow is stuck to tree limbs, to evergreen trees, to the bark of trees. It's stuck to the side. The road outside is snow-covered, heavily snow-covered, and I haven't heard a plow in several hours. They must be busy plowing the main roads right now. Everything is just sort of come to a halt, and it's a great time to record a podcast. Franklin Habit had posted, I think it was the last snowstorm, a comment about all those people who were posting photographs of their fireplace with the fire and hot cocoa. You know, have you had enough yet? I'm still enjoying the snow. I'm definitely tired of shoveling the snow. And I feel like I've gotten lazy in my habits because when we're expecting a snowstorm, there's a certain way that we park the cars to make shoveling easier. Last night, we didn't do any of that. So it could be quite a challenge today, but I am going to wait until the heavy snow tapers off before I even attempt any shoveling outside. I have drawn for the winner of the January discussion on our Bulk Bins cook-along thread. In January, the spotlight was on lentils, and my random number generator selected post number 76, which belongs to Elizabeth. She's a relatively new member of the group. She is Hilltop Fiber on Ravelry, and she has been very active on the board since she joined, translating a recipe from German to English for lentil meatballs with yogurt mint sauce. Even though I have selected the winner for January, I will not be closing the Bulk Bins cook-along threads. I will leave them open so that people can continue to have conversation about their cooking and post any recipes or photographs. The thread for February is open and the spotlight is on oats. Elizabeth, please contact me so we can talk about your prize. You have a choice of a pattern on Ravelry or some stitch markers from Neato Markers. Thank you to everyone who participated in the thread talking about lentils and cooking with lentils. I hope to keep the momentum and have a great conversation about oats this month. For a little bit of learning this week, I have a bit of background and information about oats. You can find oats in the bulk bins of your supermarket or health food store in a variety of forms. There are steel-cut oats that are dense and chewy in texture, old-fashioned oats, which are steamed and then rolled. Quick-cooking oats are prepared similarly to the old-fashioned oats, but they're cut finely before they are rolled, so they cook much more quickly. Instant oats are partially cooked, then rolled thin and dried. Instant oats will often come with additional ingredients like sugar, sweeteners, powdered milk, flavorings, dried fruit. There's oat bran, which is included in most kinds of oats that you would buy. However, you can buy oat bran separately, and that is the outer layer of the grain that exists just under the hull. And that can be added to other kinds of flour for additional fiber or for other nutritional reasons. You can also purchase oat flour and oat groats. These are unflattened oat kernels. The term groats is not particular to oats, so groats can come in many grain forms. Next week, I'll be talking a little bit more about oats and nutritional information. This week, I have a bit of cultural and historical information. Oats are an annual grass, and modern oats likely originated from an Asian wild red oat, which was primarily a weed. The Greeks and Romans considered oats to be diseased wheat due to their bland flavor, and their higher fat content makes them have a tendency to spoil. So the Greeks and Romans and people of many cultures used oats as animal food. Gradually, oats came to be cultivated in Germany, Ireland, Scotland, and many Scandinavian countries. They prefer a cool, moist climate, so they are not very well suited to Mediterranean climates. Oats were introduced in North America by Scottish settlers in the early 1600s, and they were first grown off the coast of Massachusetts. Gradually, oat cultivation moved to the Midwest, and then many of the acres that were once devoted to cultivation of oats turned to cultivation of soybeans, which are financially much more lucrative. In the 1980s, there was a resurgence of interest in oats and oat consumption because several studies showed eating oats and oatmeal to be helpful in reducing bad cholesterol and maintaining overall heart health. One interesting quote that I found as I was researching this week is from Samuel Johnson's dictionary. He defines oats as eaten by the people of Scotland, but fit only for horses in England. And that was quickly followed by the Scotsman's retort, which is, that's why England has such good horses and Scotland such fine men. The Back Porch. This week, I completed my Fellows Cloche. It's a pattern by Amy Herzog, and I was originally interested in knitting it because I will be going to the Super Summer Knit Together, a knitting retreat hosted by the Knit Girls, Laura and Leslie, and they have a series of knit-alongs leading up to their retreat. They feature patterns by the folks who are teaching at SSK, and it's a great way to see the work of others and to start meeting some folks before you attend the retreat. Amy Herzog is well known for her Fit to Flatter collection of sweaters, and she has a lot of great designs. I decided to start small because I have never knit a sweater. I have crocheted several sweaters, a cardigan, a vest, a couple of tank top style sweaters, but I've never knit one, and I wasn't ready to start the SSK knit-alongs by knitting a sweater. It just seemed a little bit of a monumental task. So I'm still thinking about it, and a lot of Amy Herzog's patterns are very appealing to me, but I haven't committed to anything yet. So I started small with this cloche. The Fellows in Fellows cloche refers to Julian Fellows, who is the mind behind Downton Abbey, and also a fantastic film. If you enjoy Downton Abbey and you haven't seen Gosford Park, you absolutely must stop everything and rent Gosford Park. And this is a flapper style hat. It's quite darling. I don't know how to explain the look of this hat without using the word darling. I used a deep teal color single ply yarn. The fiber content is alpaca, wool, and silk, so it's beautifully smooth and soft. From Juniper Moon Farms, it's in the moonshine variety of Juniper Moon Farms yarn. It's quite thick, and so I knit on US size 7, 4.5 millimeter needles, which are a bit one size larger than the pattern called for, and then I knit the smallest size of the pattern to compensate. There are three sizes of hats available in this pattern. I enjoyed the knitting of it after I was done with the wraps and turns and the linen stitch at the bottom of the hat. I wish I had known about something called double stitch and German short rows when I started knitting this hat, because I used the wraps and turns that were recommended in the pattern, and I felt that they were very sloppy, and I didn't feel that I picked them up appropriately when I went back around to complete the hat. Luckily, there is a little band. It's about 3/4 of an inch wide, also in linen stitch, that goes around the outside of the hat just above the brim, and that hides some of the inconsistencies in my knitting. If it weren't for that band, I would not care for the hat. The band seems to cover up most of my sins in knitting the hat. I think this would be a fantastic hat to try again with a single ply hand spun yarn. And knowing now what I do about the double stitch and short rows, I think I would feel much more confident knitting it the second time. One thing that motivated me to complete the hat very quickly was the fact that I could model it using the glass head I received from Samuel for Christmas. I had been using bowls and some lanterns we had outside to model hats for photographs or posting on Facebook, posting on Ravelry. But this is the first time I've had a completed project and I could model it very professionally using this glass head, which it's made in Spain. It's very thick glass and it's extremely beautiful. So you should check out the photos on my Ravelry page or on the Yarns at Yinhu blog. If you are a fan of Downton Abbey, you may have received for Christmas a copy of the unofficial Downton Abbey Knits, like I did. And before the holiday season, I was coveting a copy of this publication, but I also had seen and heard a number of reviews of the publication on other blogs and podcasts. Most of those reviews focused on the patterns, but I have been intrigued by some of the articles. And two of them struck me as worthy of further conversation this week. The first is an article right in the front by Christina Garten called The Life and Times of Highclere Castle. And Highclere Castle, for those of you, the one or two people who may not be familiar, Highclere Castle is the location in which Downton Abbey is filmed. And it turns out that some of the inhabitants and some of the events that took place at Highclere Castle are also part of the inspiration for events that occur in this TV miniseries. Highclere Castle's current inhabitant, the 8th Countess of Carnarvon, is Fiona Herbert, and she has researched the life of the 5th Countess of Carnarvon, whose name was Alamina, and has published a book about Alamina's life and what it was like living at Highclere Castle. Several aspects of Alamina's life have been attributed to Cora, Lady Grantham of the Downton Abbey miniseries, and the book is fascinating. It is something I've read. I received this book on Lady Alamina and the real Highclere Castle as a Christmas gift last year, and so I read it last winter. It's highly informative. There are many, many, many photographs reproduced in the book and a wider, broader history of that castle and the times and the life of Alamina. Oh, and another thing is that the 5th Earl of Carnarvon was a gentleman Egyptologist. He wasn't a scientist, but he was incredibly interested in uncovering the wealth and grandeur that could be found in tombs. And over the years, he put a great deal of money and energy into working at specific sites in Egypt and was partially responsible, therefore, for the discovery of King Tutankhamun's tomb. The very next article in Downton Abbey Knits is titled For Richer, Not Poorer. It's by Mary Politica Bush. And on the title page is a reproduction of a print of Consuela Vanderbilt. She was the Duchess of Marlborough and the daughter of Alva Vanderbilt. In the first episode of this podcast, I talked about visiting Newport, Rhode Island this summer and touring Marble House. The reason we were at Marble House is that on the property is a tea house. It was built and used by Alva Vanderbilt, who was an amazing champion of women's suffrage. And she used it as a spectacle, and she used Marble House to do a great deal of entertaining. Even though it's on a very grand scale, Marble House is a kind of family cottage. It's not a very large residence. And you can tell from the layout of the house and the property that it was primarily used for entertainment and for a family to stay there during the summer months. So Alva's daughter was Consuelo, and you might think that all of Alva's energies on women's suffrage and rights for women would lead her to seek a love marriage for her daughter, or lead her to consider her daughter's feelings about her own marriage. That was not the case. In 1895, when Alva Vanderbilt's daughter had her debut, she was worth about $20 million. And Alva had her sights on an English earl or an English lord or some kind of English nobility for her daughter Consuelo. And she found it in the Duke of Marlborough, and Consuelo became the Duchess of Marlborough, and her wedding was, I mean, if we can imagine what the scale of Princess Diana's wedding or all of the hype surrounding Kate Middleton when she got married, this was the kind of hype that surrounded Consuelo Vanderbilt's wedding. Apparently, word about the design of her undergarments was leaked to Vogue. It was not a happy marriage, but there was a great deal of hype surrounding that wedding. And the reason this is of interest in the unofficial Downton Abbey knits is that Consuelo and other young American heiresses like her, who were worth a great deal of money, often went to England to find husbands. And potential English husbands were interested, or their families were interested, in rich American girls as wives because there was a lot of struggle keeping an estate in the changing times of the turn of the century. This is well documented and well reflected in Downton Abbey. The scripts often contain references to the trouble that Lord Grantham is having in maintaining his estate. In the series, it is clear that the money Cora brought with her to the marriage has been essential in maintaining Downton Abbey. Since Yinhu Chaiwan was inspired by that tea house on the property of Marble House that was built by Ava Vanderbilt, it kind of feels like 6 degrees of separation, that there's a tiny thread of connection between Downton Abbey and Yinhu.
Acorns are dropping off my Jenny's house. Two ducks in my spyglass, flowery as a...
Thanks for listening. Music for this episode is Sweet, music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Krista Long and Cesar Diaz. If you enjoyed today's show, you might consider liking the show's Facebook page or leaving a comment or a review on iTunes. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
River bends like an elbow, turning stones to sand. It's a subway nature thing. It's a subway nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Sycamore trees are blazing like a rainbow fire, just like Linda Curtis, burn out on a wire. It's a subway nature thing. It's a subway nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Nature's a get you high till your face is smile. Jump a river naked, hike a country mile. It's a subway nature thing. It's a subway nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature.